The wait is over. The Chi returns with new episodes on Paramount Plus.
What brings you to the Chi?
Opportunity.
Everybody get down! Walk right up to
the side. A new rain is coming to the South Side.
Never should have sent a boy to do a woman's job.
The Chi. New episodes May 10th. Visit ParamountPlus.com/The Chi to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto renews. Restrictions apply.
Welcome into the Autzen Audibles podcast. I'm Matt Brame, Eric Scopel on the show as always. And it's Wednesday, which now means it is mailbag day. And before we dive into your questions for the week, want to remind you guys, right now we are running a promotion for a VIP membership, 60% off an annual VIP membership, 60% off. That's a huge savings. Highly encourage you guys to check that out. You can get expert analysis, read all the content across the entire 24/7 Sports Network, all of that by subscribing today. Okay, we got questions on a wide range of things, Eric. Let's jump right into these and hammer these out.
Yeah, first we're going to start with, well, we should know we recorded a podcast and quite a bit has happened. And of course, Matt was Matt was off on Monday, which was, of course, the day where Keith Hayward announces he's no longer going to be with Oregon, and then Oregon picks up a commitment from Brian Cardwell. We also had Anthony Brown Sunday evening announcing he would be returning. So we're going to recover a lot of these different topics on this podcast via questions. First from at CZN4. Will Mario Cristobal replace Keith Hayward with another defensive backs coach? If so, who are some possible candidates? If not, what are the possible restructures in the staff and how else might they fill that open spot? Hashtag Opts and Audibles. I think this is an important place to start here because I think the news of the last little bit here, and since we've recorded a mailbag, is Oregon has, it seems like, I mean, nothing has been announced officially, a new defensive coordinator in Tim DeRuiter, and Keith Hayward has quickly, it's kind of a bit almost like a coaching trade here, as DeRuiter has coaching at Cal, has now come to Oregon, and Keith Hayward, who is Oregon's co-defensive coordinator and safeties coach, has now gone and replaced DeRuiter on Justin Wilcox's staff, at Cal. So Oregon now does have an open assistant coaching position because obviously Andy Avalos has gone and Keith Hayward has gone. Do some simple math. That's two departures, one guy coming in. It's an interesting question here. And honestly, I think it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. DeRuiter has experience as a linebackers coach, but he also has experience as a defensive backs coach. Not out of the realm of possibility, and we should note at Cal, he was coaching linebackers. So most recently, he's been coaching linebackers. He played linebacker in college decades ago, not a younger guy. But like, I do kind of think his coaching versatility here provides a situation where I would think Oregon, in theory, could get kind of selective in terms of, okay, do we, if there's maybe a better defensive backs coach available, well, then we'll just have DeRuiter stay at linebacker. But if we think there's a better linebackers coach available, we could have DeRuiter coach the team's safeties or coach something in the defensive backfield. Maybe he's more comfortable with, I don't know. I don't want to get into what they would do with moving Rod Chance around at all. But I think it's kind of interesting to think about that because of DeRuiter's versatility and experience, maybe there will be an opportunity to see Oregon target somebody based upon best possible coach rather than best possible fit. Matt, do you kind of agree with that, or kind of have you heard anything specifically about what they might be looking for?
DeRuiter gives them options now. Right. You said it perfectly. He can coach linebackers. He can coach DBs. You still have Rod Chance coaching cornerbacks, and I believe DeRuiter's experience in the DB group is with safeties. So you could have DeRuiter go safeties D coordinator and then go out and try and find an outside linebackers coach. Or you could also go – with hiring a DB coach to replace Hayward. And internally you have a couple, I think you have one person that you look at, Kwame Agyeman, the former Oregon Duck player. He's been with the Ducks for, I want to say 4 or 5 years now, working as a defensive assistant, started with John Neal and most recently with Hayward and Dante Williams and Rod Chance. when Chance replaced Williams. So he's been with the system. He worked under Leavitt. He's worked under Avalos. He's a really good dude. Do you throw it his way? I also think you maybe go and look into the NFL here a little bit. And Gerald Alexander, he's a former Cal coach. He works currently with the Miami Dolphins. He's, I believe, close with DeRuiter. Maybe you could go and hire DeRuiter as the outside linebackers coach and throw Gerald Alexander as the safeties coach, throw him some more money. Maybe you make him like a co-DC type of a deal. He's a rising star in the coaching ranks. I think that would make a lot of sense. Derek Ansley was a name that was attached to Oregon previously from other reports for the DC gig. He's out at Tennessee as one of their assistant coaches. Maybe it's a co-DC type deal there. DeRuiter has experience working as co-DC, and if you let him know, hey, this is your show, we just want to add an extra title to somebody else, that way we can bring them in. Maybe a Tosh Lopai, maybe a Glenn Schumann from Georgia, a guy that, those are two candidates that they were looking at to be the DC before settling on DeRuiter, but maybe you could get both. They are saving some money. They've increased their salary pool, I've been told, when Mario Cristobal signed his contract extension. They've, Avalos' deal probably will save them a little bit because they don't have to pay DeRuiter as much, I expect. They're probably going to have some extra cash with Keith Hayward because he was one of Oregon's highest paid assistant coaches. So there's going to be some money out there. Maybe you could, best case scenario, hire two of these defensive quarter candidates that you were looking at before settling on DeRuiter.
No, I think there's certainly some options here, and it'll be very interesting to see how they proceed here. And we've now spoken a little bit about DeRuiter's hire in the past, but I think one of the things we lost, in part because we didn't necessarily expect to see a position coach leave, we thought it was possible. And I think if you could listen back to the podcast right after Andy Avalos left, one of the things we suggested was look out for what Keith Hayward might do here. If they overlook him for this job again, if they hire somebody else again, he's probably going to be open to going somewhere else. And he has. And now Oregon has to find a top-tier assistant coach. And you're right, maybe it's going to be a deal where they bring in candidate B that they were, the next guy they were looking at, and they can bring in somebody to – I mean, DeRuiter's an older guy, and they can hand this off to somebody in the next couple of years or whatnot. I just think that you've got a lot of interesting possibilities here with how this plays out. Obviously, you hate to see Keith Hayward leave. He was on the staff before Mario Cristobal was the head coach. He's one of the more senior assistant coaches here, really helped from a recruiting perspective, developed some great defensive backs. But it'll be very interesting to see what they move on to next. All right, next one from at @MVH_genetics. How does recently signed Byron Cardwell fit into an already loaded backfield? Do you see him having a specific role, or do you see Mario still starting to play players still playing more experienced players over the younger guys? I would not expect Byron Cardwell, and we talked about this on our Sunday podcast, even before Cardwell was officially announced. It doesn't feel like you can just say you think a true freshman is going to come in and start over a bunch of guys who've been starting running backs for a long time. So I would say to me, it's more likely Cardwell redshirts or has no role in 2021 than it does he starts. Right. I mean, I would be pretty stunned if we look up and there's a Byron Cardwell is one of the primary running backs early on in the season. That doesn't mean he can't develop into that, but we've seen already how long it's taken for Sean Dollars, a player who's just as talented, to get into the, to figure himself, find a role for himself. So I lean more towards I would expect Cardwell to be a really high upside player and somebody who might challenge to start once you see CJ Verdell and Travis Dye leave the program. But best case, I think, for Byron Cardwell and probably for Sean Dollars, is that they replace Cyrus Hibibilikio as that third running back. And that's the most immediate playing time they get. Cause I just really don't see a situation where Verdell or Dye are not a big part of your offense unless one or both of them are injured. And of course, with Verdell's health history, that's certainly possible. But I don't think I look at this and think, okay, you bring in Byron Cardwell, he steps in, and in 2021, he's your starting running back day one.
I don't need to really dive more into that than you just said, but I'll say this. I'll be a better opportunity for playing time for a freshman, I think, in 2021 that's not named Sean Dollars is Trey Benson than Brian Caldwell. I would be more surprised if Caldwell jumps Benson in 2021 than any kind of mop-up duty role, limited, you know, reps that are given to the fourth running back, then Caldwell, jumping up, to 3 or 4, spots on the depth chart. I just think Verdell and Dye will get a bulk of the carries. Dollars will be that third guy, like you said. And then, it'll be up to Benson and Caldwell to duke it out for that fourth spot. If, that usually ends up with 35, 40 carries on the year.
Yeah, I just think it's hard to expect a huge role for a true freshman. We've talked about that even with some of these other true freshmen that are quarterbacks and wide receivers. Before starting him halfway through his freshman season, this year's abbreviated COVID-19 debacle, and now a DC change the year before he presumably declares for the NFL, are we going to miss out on seeing an entire season of KT's full potential? I forgot to ask, read the question. It was from @GoDucks. I think an interesting part of this here now is you look at Kayvon Thibodeau, and I don't know if I would say we're not going to see his full potential, but this is going to be his last season in 2021. I think we can say that with extreme confidence. if he comes back, I'm not even going to bring that possibility, because I don't even think that's not even going to happen. But his freshman season, he didn't play every game or start every game, and that was because of Gus Cumberlander. He got hurt. This last season was a shortened season. Now, you could also argue he could be maximized in a new way. I mean, let's not just assume that because Oregon has a new defensive coordinator, this is going to be a throwaway season for Kayvon Thibodeau. That presumes that Tim Drudder does not know how to use defensive linemen or outside linebackers. And as we chronicled and talked about on last week's show, I mean, this is a guy who coached Von Miller at Texas A&M. That guy turned out pretty good. He knows what to do with these sort of big time talents. He had some guys at Cal, obviously not the same caliber of Von Miller, but guys that have gone on to be really good college players, have pro careers. So I don't think you can say this isn't going to be a thing where you just, it was a throwaway three seasons for Thibodeau. I would be stunned if he's not super productive in 2021. It will be, I think one of the big question marks for when we do get to speak with Tim Drudder is how are they going to utilize Kayvon Thibodeau? He's clearly your most talented player on the entire team, but especially on defense, obviously. And we've seen him now in Andy Avalos' defense play with his hand down on as a defensive end, but also play standing up a little bit as an outside linebacker. What will happen? How will they utilize Kayvon in what will be his last season? So, I guess I'd answer the question and say, I don't think it's going to be a wasted career or we're going to miss out on a season where we don't see KT's full potential. I actually think you could see him utilized in different ways than maybe you would see under Andy Avalos. That doesn't have to be a bad thing, but I'm more just curious to see what Tim Drudder sees in Kayvon Thibodeau. And honestly, what does the NFL see in Kayvon Thibodeau? Do they see him as being a hand in the dirt defensive end, or is he big picture, better as some sort of outside linebacker hybrid role? And in that case, could he actually benefit from playing a little bit more of that position in 2021 under a new defensive coordinator?
Yeah, it certainly sucks. This is one of those COVID sucks type deals where it took away a full season of his sophomore year, and now going into his junior year, where does he fit within the defense? I mean, that's not a negative question. It's because he's so talented. And you're right. Does he play more outside linebacker at the NFL level? Is he more of a defensive end? And I think that's going to make him it's so popular among NFL scouts and, mock drafts and all of that, because he can play both, and he can play both at such a high level, and he's such a unique talent. I mean, this is a guy that's going to be a top 5 pick, top 10 draft pick in the 2022 NFL draft. Could be Oregon's third straight year with a top 10 draft pick in the NFL draft, Herbert being the first one, and then probably Penei Sewell. I would be shocked if he fell out of the top 10, and then Kayvon Thibodeau. But yeah, it's interesting to see how DeRuiter is going to implement the linebacking core, what the scheme changes, and how that gets him on the field and where they put him. But I think his junior year, it's going to go back to what Von Miller did at Texas A&M before he went off to the NFL. You know, that's if I'm Kayvon Thibodeau, that's exactly what I'm kind of molding myself after, is can I be the next Von Miller going in there?
All right, next one, and Colby got a little bit creative here because he got this is three questions here from Colby Trujillo, at Take It Cheesy. One, Anthony Brown is back. I still don't feel like he's going to start a game for the Ducks. Am I crazy? Two, CJ Verdell is back due to his record of getting injured. Which back is most likely to sneak into the rotation? Sean Dollars, of course, but what about sleepers? We've already touched on that one. And then three, how big of an impact is losing Coach Hayward going to affect Oregon on and off the field? I just wanted to at least jump in on the first part here in particular, because we kind of addressed the other two a little bit. And I think we can talk maybe more about what losing Hayward does, because we've focused more of the attention on how Oregon might replace him. But as far as Anthony Brown coming back, I kind of side with what Colby was saying here in terms of, like, I don't look at this and feel like the job is very clear for anybody at quarterback, but I certainly don't think Anthony Brown comes back and it's just like, boom, he's a starting quarterback day one. Like, I don't think there's no given here. Clearly, I think you have to expect and believe that the conversations Anthony Brown had with Oregon's assistant coaching staff, with Mario Cristobal, were to the extent of like, hey, the job is available. Like, it's not set in stone. He's not returning knowing he's a backup in 2021, because he's already kind of seen that show one time. I think he's coming back with the expectation that the job remains open, that he has an opportunity to win it, and obviously feels pretty decent about his odds of doing so. But for me, I'm still, and I know Matt is also still in this place, we've talked about it, in the camp of like, it's Tyler Shuck is probably going to be, because he is the incumbent, hard to like completely displace right away. And my expectation would be like, more likely it's going to be Tyler Shuck starting the season. And I think if he gets replaced, it's probably almost just as likely that it's going to be by one of the younger guys, a Ty Thompson or a Jay Butterfield. And that's not to say Anthony Brown can't do that, but like, I'd probably say, like, in terms of quarterbacks, I think the highest odds are that they finish the season as Oregon starting quarterback. I'd say Shuck number one, I'd say Ty Thompson number two, and I'd probably have Anthony Brown number three in that order, with Jay Butterfield fourth. Matt, do you agree with that? I don't want to disparage Anthony Brown, but I also feel like there's become kind of a rewriting of the way the season concluded, where it's like Anthony Brown was just this incredible. Again, I don't want to say he was bad, but like, I didn't see enough in the two games that he was playing to be like, this guy is Justin Herbert, or this guy is, you know, like even an all conference caliber guy. Like, I think he's serviceable, and he gave Oregon something interesting in two games where the opposing defense really didn't know what to expect with him. But you also saw, I thought, in the second half against Iowa State in the Fiesta Bowl, a defense go, oh, okay, so he's kind of this side of a player, and then adapt. And he was pretty much ineffective. So, like, I think there's become this narrative from the fan base of like, Anthony Brown is kind of like the savior in the next, and like, you know, he's going to pass the torch to Ty Thompson. And like, I feel like there hasn't been enough evidence, from my perspective at least, to suggest that's the case.
Yeah, I'm with you. I have a hard time saying anybody is
right
overwhelming favorite to win the job. But if I was going to pick somebody to be the favorite, it's Tyler Shuck. And I don't think there's anyone else out there that you can say, like, hey, if you had to pick somebody to be, you know, the favorite to win the job in 2021 at quarterback for Oregon, I don't think there's another guy. Like you either say the field or Tyler Shuck. There's no Tyler Shuck or Anthony Brown or Ty Thompson or field option. Like, it's either, in my eyes, it's either Shuck wins the job, or you bet the field that somebody else outside of Tyler Shuck wins the job. And I'm with you. I don't think Anthony Brown showed me enough where I say definitively he's the odds-on favorite to win the gig.
Yeah, and who knows? Maybe the spring is going to be
Right. And that's, I mean, that's just right now. Maybe spring changes things.
Yeah, totally. I mean, this is going to be the most anticipated spring from a quarterback competition perspective that I've ever covered. And I don't know, Matt probably agrees too. I know there have been times, we've said this before, but there have been times where, you know, it's been, okay, well, Marcus Mariota or Brian Bennett or, you know, more recently, like, well, I don't even know how – Justin Herbert, there really wasn't that much intrigue when he was kind of – like Willie Taggart made it sound like there was more intrigue than there really was, I think. But, like, I think, like, we legitimately go into spring and we're like, I really don't have – like, I think – I agree with Matt. Like, I think if you – it's – Taylor Shuck is certainly the guy who's got the best odds of being the starter coming out of spring. But, like, I don't – I think we go into spring being like, oh, it's – you know, if there's anyone who's really got a strong handle on this, and that's pretty unique, especially in a season where you don't lose your starting quarterback. So
it almost, if I'm just trying to rack my brain here, like Dakota Prukop was brought on to be the starter before Justin Herbert, and then Herbert assumed the gig midway through the year as a freshman. Vernon Adams the year before that, like that was Vernon Adams' job. And then, you know, Marcus beat out Brian Bennett for the gig. That was kind of a surprise, but not really. But it was like definitively just those two guys. And Marcus, if you talk to people, was the leader in the clubhouse throughout. Before that, Darren Thomas beat out Nate Costa. And then you also had Nate Costa was going to be the quarterback, but then he got hurt in training camp, and then it ended up falling on Jeremiah Mazzoli, and he won the gig during the year. And that was a battle where it was kind of like your top dog got hurt, and it wasn't, you know, that's just unfortunate. I think Roper opened the year as a starting quarterback, and then Mazzoli ended up ultimately taking over. Before that, I'm trying to think, that is where it gets really just funky. I think Dennis Dixon was the overwhelming favorite to win the gig. And then replacing that, it was Kellen Clemens. And that's where it really feels like it could go either way, was replacing Joey. Jason Fife, who was a junior, or Kellen Clemens, who was, I believe, a sophomore at the time. And who do you pick to win the gig? And it was back and forth. Bilotti went with Fife. And then they ultimately ended up, you know, splitting the job throughout the year.
Yeah, that right there might be about as close as you get. It's interesting. It's going to be really interesting. And so really quick, let's just address, like, the what Oregon loses with Coach Hayward part, I think, because – we talked a little bit about what kind of coach they might replace him with, but I think it does at least deserve to be acknowledged that he was an instrumental part of this team and this coaching staff. You saw
the look on Twitter, all the players and their responses to it.
I was just going to say the outpouring of appreciation from players, from Nick Pickett to Thomas Graham to Javon Holland to guys still on the roster, Kayvon Thibodeau pointing to just kind of how much of a father figure he was. You lose that part of it. You lose a coach with tremendous recruiting ties to Southern California. I think I saw one of the St. John Bosco assistant coaches tweet that Keith Hayward is one of his best friends. You know, I mean, those kind of things are lost. And it doesn't, I think from a recruiting perspective, I won't say I'm not worried.
These aren't things that Oregon can't overcome.
Yeah, totally. They lost Dante Williams, who had probably a better connection in that area. And then they went out and just, they cleaned house pretty well this last cycle down there. I mean, they got a lot of the guys they wanted. So I don't think it's going to, like, they're not that handcuffed. And part of what will be interesting to see is whoever this next hire is. And like we talked about, like, what kind of ties does that person have to that area? But like, I think primarily you're losing a coach who was at least had his, he was involved with a lot of really good defensive backs. Oregon's had some really good defensive backs come out over the last handful of years, and he was involved in a lot of that. I mean, he coached Ugo Amadi for his last couple of seasons. He obviously was involved with the Thomas Graham and Diomede Lenore, with Javon Holland, with Brady Breeze, with Nick Pickett, with the development of Mekhale Wright. So, I mean, like, this is somebody who's definitely, you know, you look at the defensive back group, and that's been one of the strongest position groups on the team for the last three or four seasons, and he was involved in that. So certainly this is not a small loss. This is a coach who at least was developing talent and recruiting at a high level. With that said, like, I think they can go out and find somebody who's comparable. I think that's the thing that's been impressive with Mario Cristobal and why I do have some confidence here. It's not just that I don't want to diminish what Keith Hayward is, but I also think it's important to just say, like, we've seen time and time again, the trend be Mario Cristobal has to go find a replacement for Coach X, and Coach Y or Z comes in and is, if not better, at least comparable. And so, like, I have a lot of confidence they're going to find the right guy, but I do think it has to be noted at least that Hayward was somebody who connected really, really well with players all across the roster and did recruit the LA area really well, or at least had connections down there to do so.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, it hurts Oregon, no doubt, but it's also not one that they can't overcome.
All right. Fifth one from at U of O Fighting. With the 2021 recruiting class coming to an end, what is the over under on landing a top five class in 2022? Hashtag odds and audibles. I don't know how to do an over under on this, because I don't know if that's I'll start here. Either I'm not smart enough to do this in terms of, like, creating the odds for this, or I don't think that's how odds work in terms of an over under on a top five class. I would just say, like, Matt, like, do we think it's likely they can get there? I don't want to set any, like, betting lines, because, again, I don't know if I know how to do that, but, like, I would suggest, like, 2021, we should say, after Cardwell has committed, with a couple of other prospects still on the board, is right there at number six nationally, right behind LSU, within at least a kicking chance, or, you know, of a striking distance, I should say, to, like, maybe get to five in 2021. I think it would take everything falling in the right way. It would take maybe LSU losing a commitment. It would take Oregon landing all their top targets. But, like, they're not that far off. 2022, it's still a ways out, right? I mean, we can't dismiss that. But, Matt, like, do you think there's a chance that they go top five in 2022, or kind of what's your stance on that?
Yeah, I think there's certainly a chance. Seeing it in 2021 is probably not going to happen. Just like you said, like, they're going to need a lot of help to get there. And I just don't think there's enough there to get them over the hump to get into the top five for 2021. They would need, like, best case scenario plus some help. 2022, it's there. There's enough prospects at West. I mean, they could theoretically line up their entire offensive line class by hitting just the state of Washington and the state of Utah and landing the top prospects that they're going after in those two states alone for the offensive line. There's a four-star receiver that's high on Oregon from Portland. There's another elite four-star receiver from Vancouver area. You know, they don't have to go very far to sign and get some of these really big name players. Now, are there going to be, you know, there's only a couple five stars at West, and USC's recruiting at a better clip now. Is it going to be as easy to get those guys to come your way? No, it's not. It's going to be difficult. But if you had to tell me 2022 being top five, or Oregon winning 11 games in the regular season in 2021, I would pick top five in 2022 recruiting class over Oregon winning 11 games next season in football. That's how I feel about that.
Let's wrap it up here with a question from at Robbie Parnes. During announcements, what do you think of recruits doing the fake out with gear from other finalists before revealing which school they actually pick? I think a kid deserves to announce however they want, but it also feels kind of disrespectful. Hashtag odds and audibles. And I think this is in part referencing Byron Cardwell's announcement from Monday, where he removes two shirts, I think Texas A&M and maybe UCLA. I can't remember who the second was, to reveal an Oregon shirt, and then throws the O up, commits to Oregon, and now he'll be part of the 2021 class. And as we said earlier, I think a really highly regarded kid. I love his vision. I think he's got upside to be talented. Don't know if it's going to be immediate that he makes a contribution, but certainly a player to be excited about. I don't really have much of an issue with any of it. Like, I mean, and you know, I'll also say that in part because to take people behind the curtain a bit here, typically I'm not waiting as somebody who doesn't know what's going to happen. Matt, between Matt and Kevin and the national experts, like I usually know when a kid's picking Oregon or not. And so if I'm watching the video live, I'm like, it's going to be Oregon. And so maybe there's a second of like, oh, wow, crap. Did we get the wrong intel? Like, how did this go wrong? But I'm also usually pretty patient of like, no, this is ultimately going to be the kid revealing he's going to Oregon. And so I also, so the flip side of that is I also am typically not watching an announcement where I already know the kid is going to another school. Because I just kind of already know.
Like, I look at this and think, by the way, that was a nice little flex there.
You like that?
I will say this. Every kid has his own, has his right to make any kind of decision and make any kind of announcement that he wants. He can go over the top. He can do ludicrous things that we view as ludicrous that he thinks is cool. It's his moment. He has that right. Now, doing the hat switcheroo or you know, using props of other schools and making, you know, fake outs and whatnot is sometimes in today's day and age of college athletics, players transfer and you've developed relationships. And sometimes you may hurt that relationship if that doesn't work out at the school that you choose and you want to call that position coach at school B, who you was second choice and you did the, you know, fake out, you might call him in 2 years when he all of a sudden is the OC at a different school. And he'll say, you know what? Like, I'm not all about the, you know, the way you recruited, you know, how you handled your commitment. We found another guy and we're going to just go with him because we like his character more. So there's always, you know, for every decision you make, there is a reaction and consequence, positive or a negative. So I'm all for kids doing it. And, you know, just understand that it may come back and hurt you down the road too.
Yeah. Ultimately, I'm not too bothered by it, but I think sometimes it does sort of speak to, I don't want to say character, but it sort of is, it's kind of, it lends itself to maybe the wrong taste in the mouth, especially if you're an opposing school.
Right. Right. It's going to do it for us here on the Odds and Audibles podcast. Thank you for listening. Thank you for submitting your mailbag questions. And until next week when we do another one, thank you for listening to the Odds and Audibles Mailbag Podcast. We'll talk to you later.
Should you ever set foot outside of the motel, you will be shot.
Don't miss the new Showtime limited series based on the international bestseller.
For the last 4 years, I've been a prisoner.
Why are they keeping you here?
Starring Emmy Award winner Ewan McGregor.
This is the brave new world that you dreamt of.
Be very careful. You are still a prisoner here.
Everything in this new world comes at cost.
This is still my country.
A Gentleman in Moscow, now streaming on Paramount+, only with the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.